views and opinions of findings and or devices discussed in this podcast are those of the host, subject matter experts, and or guests. Facts represented constitute our understanding at the time of the podcast, whereas updated factual information may be developed. This should not be construed as pronouncing an official Department of Defense position, policy, decision, or endorsement. The hosts and guests of QBIS may be defense contract personnel who support the Traumatic Brain Injury Center of Excellence. Status of all hosts and guests will be identified during introductions of the podcast. Hi, welcome to Clinical Updates in Brain Injury Science Today, or QBIST, a podcast for healthcare providers about current research on traumatic brain injury, also known as TBI. This program is produced by the TBI COE. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Stussy, a contractor in support of TBI COE. Today I'll be speaking with Lauren Irias, a health system specialist, also a contractor in support of TBI COE. Lauren and I will discuss a study titled Benzodiazepine Prescription Patterns After Mild Traumatic Brain Injury in U.S. Military Service Members, written by Lauren and her colleagues at TBI COE and published in Military Medicine in July 2024. Lauren, thank you for being on our podcast.
Thank you for having me, Keith.
So just so our audience knows, Lauren and I both work at TBI COE, and we actually both work in clinical affairs. And so, Lauren, great to have you here today. And it's always fun featuring folks who work at TBI COE and really featuring the research that they do. So welcome. And, you know, before we really get started talking about the study, can you just give the audience a brief background on how you got into the field of traumatic brain injury?
Well, thanks for that introduction, Keith. I found my way through a variety of lived experiences, curiosity, and work experience, essentially. I was working in clinical ICU, interfacing with individuals with brain injury, and this was also a time of individuals returning from OIF, OEF, and the aftermath of PTSD and blast-related TBI that really motivated me to join the field.
That's really great, Lauren. And, you know, thank you for giving us that background. So regarding why we're here today, can you share with us why this study was done?
Sure, Keith. Firstly, we were interested in the potential to measure a large breadth of clinical practice guidelines for traumatic brain injury, utilizing the Military Health Systems Administrative Health databases that we had access to. While there are multiple clinical practice tools for the treatment of traumatic brain injury, there is one single consolidated and comprehensive joint VA-DOD clinical practice guideline for the treatment of mild TBI and its common sequelae. So we approached and applied a multi-factor prioritization schema to select one particular recommendation, and that was the recommendation against the utilization or the prescribing of benzodiazepine in the active healing period after a mild traumatic brain injury. We felt that this particular recommendation was important for several reasons. One, benzodiazepines are commonly prescribed to manage anxiety, agitation, insomnia, which are also symptoms often associated with TBI. However, these benzodiazepine drugs can have significant side effects, including sedation, cognitive impairment, and dependency, which can complicate or hinder the recovery process. TBIs themselves can often result in cognitive deficits, such as memory problems, attention difficulties, and impaired executive function. Benzodiazepines can exacerbate these issues, leading to a worsening of cognitive symptoms. There's also the risk of dependency, and that long-term use of benzodiazepines carries a risk of physical and psychological dependency.
Well, thanks. And those are really excellent points, Lauren, and certainly great reasons as to why your study is so important. So can you tell us about the methods that you used, specifically the follow-on validation method? I found that quite interesting when I read your study.
Thanks, Keith. We identified U.S. service members who sustained a diagnosis of mild traumatic brain injury from the comprehensive ambulatory professional encounter record databases of the Military Health System Medical Data Repository, or MDR, using the International Classification of Diseases 10th Revision Clinical Modification Codes for MTBI found in any diagnostic position, also known as ICD-10. The first MTBI-coded medical encounter that prompted the service member's inclusion in our study, we termed the Index Encounter. In order to ensure the service member's first MTBI encounter occurred during the study period, which was October 2015 through September 2016, we included only those service members without a medical encounter containing an ICD-10 CM diagnostic code in the previous 90 days to that index encounter. Essentially, we had a 90-day washout period. The use of benzodiazepine in cases of resolved mild TBI is not contraindicated. Thus, we included only instances of mild TBI under active treatment, which we defined as an instance of a minimum of 2 TBI-related medical encounters no greater than 60 days apart after a washout period. We defined our period of interest as the time in which the service member was actively receiving treatment for a newly sustained mild TBI. Then we obtained data on the prescriptions filled during active treatment for a mild TBI from the Pharmacy Detail Transaction Service database of the MDR and defined benzodiazepine prescriptions based on the American Hospital Formulary Service Therapeutic Classification System, which included anxiolytics, sedatives, and hypnotics, as well as anticonvulsants. We then obtained prescription data for the period of active TBI treatment. Prescription data within the PDTS system does identify the encounter in which the prescription originated.
Wow, that's really interesting, and thanks for that overview. You know, Lauren, I think it's interesting how you and your team were able to mine those data sources for your study. So thanks for explaining that in detail. And moving on, can you tell us what the results of the study were?
Well, Keith, we found that 4.5% of U.S. service members who are undergoing active treatment for an acute mild traumatic brain injury had been issued a prescription for a benzodiazepine while undergoing this treatment. We found that of those service members, they were more likely to be female and older than those who filled a prescription for any medication other than a benzodiazepine. These findings were not specific to one branch of the military service over another, and we did not find a significant difference among branches between benzodiazepine and non-benzodiazepine prescription patterns during a service member's mild traumatic brain injury treatment. In other words, the issue of benzodiazepine usage and prescription patterns during an active healing period for a mild traumatic brain injury is not heavily weighted to one service branch of the military more than another.
That's really fascinating because even though the Army is the largest branch of military numbers-wise, I would have thought that, you know, just again, by numbers, the Army would have had more prescriptions, but I guess you did not find that. Is that correct?
That's right, Keith, in so much as the likelihood of an individual receiving a benzodiazepine during that active healing period was not influenced by the branch of service in which they were a member.
Thanks for clearing that up. So go ahead, keep going with your results. Sorry for interrupting there.
No, not at all. The most common principal diagnosis that we found assigned to a benzodiazepine prescribing encounter was anxiety, any anxiety disorder. However, interestingly, the second most common was a TBI diagnostic code. So that's interesting because anxiety is an understood diagnosis that could be associated with a benzodiazepine. However, there isn't any clinical value that's been established in treating concussion with a benzodiazepine. So we found it interesting that that was the primary diagnostic code at a prescribing encounter for a benzodiazepine. Behavioral health diagnoses cumulatively accounted for the primary diagnosis of about a third of the prescribing encounters. We also found that among patients who filled a prescription, almost two-thirds filled multiple prescriptions for either benzodiazepines and antidepressants, benzodiazepines and an NSAID, or benzodiazepines and opioids, which is of particular concern. Among cohorts patients filling a benzodiazepine, we matched most of these patients to the prescribing provider, as well as the clinic and appointment classification for the care setting where the benzodiazepine prescription was issued. So of these matched individuals, almost half, 42.8%, received their prescription from a mental health designated clinical facility during the acute treatment phase for their mild TBI. And for the purposes of the study, again, this acute treatment phase was defined as 60 days after sustaining their mild TBI. Mental health care providers did make up almost half, 40.4% of the prescribing providers identified.
Wow. So I found it interesting that there was this statistical significance between sex and age in the benzodiazepine prescriptions. So can you speak more to this finding?
Definitely.
Our findings were that age and sex were significantly related to benzodiazepine prescription rates, and this agreed with the same observations made in civilian populations by other studies. These findings are additionally interesting on a few notes. For starters, despite higher prescription rates, older adults are more susceptible to the adverse effects of benzodiazepines, such as sedation, cognitive impairment, and increased risk of falls. These risks have led to concerns about the appropriateness of prescribing benzodiazepines in an older population. Studies consistently show that women are prescribed benzodiazepines at a higher rate than men, and this disparity is partly due to women being more likely to report and seek treatment for anxiety and insomnia, conditions for which benzodiazepines are frequently prescribed. Additionally, women are also more likely to use benzodiazepines for longer periods, according to studies, increasing the risk of dependency and other long-term side effects. The reasons for this could include both physiological differences and social factors, such as gender-related stressors. When speaking specifically about older women, this group is particularly vulnerable to the risks associated with long-term benzodiazepine use, including cognitive decline and increased risk of falls.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. You know, as a former Navy family practice and sports medicine doc, we always tried to use alternative methods when treating things such as anxiety and insomnia, and we used a lot of CBT in our practice. And related to that, you mentioned that nearly 30% of the appointments for benzodiazepines were prescribed during their MTBI course were for a neuromuscular condition. I was reading that in your article. And as I said, I used to be a primary care sports med doc, and I certainly recommended against using benzodiazepines for musculoskeletal conditions, you know, specifically for chronic low back pain, which is a very big issue with our military service members. Can you discuss further your thoughts on the high prevalence of use of benzodiazepines for neuromuscular conditions?
Well, what you said there really resonates, Keith, and completely agreed. Well, first off, the combined VA-DOD clinical practice guidelines for both lower back pain and chronic pain recommend against benzodiazepine prescription for either condition. There was not any clinical evidence found that would suggest that this would be the appropriate treating prescription for these conditions. In many cases, other medications like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, also called NSAIDs, or even muscle relaxants with a lower risk of sedation and dependency, such as cyclobenzaprine, or methocarbamol, may be preferred over benzodiazepines for treating musculoskeletal conditions.
Yeah, and certainly you've mentioned that dependency issue a couple times already today, and that is a significant issue, especially in our service members. Moving on, what I did not find surprising was the high incidence of mental health conditions that contribute to benzodiazepine use and the high prescription rate by mental health providers. But you would hope that these providers would be more aware that their patients had sustained a mild traumatic brain injury and really advocate avoidance of these medications after they had a mild TBI. So do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, Keith, I definitely agree with you there. But asking about recent injuries or even concussion is not routinely solicited by therapists or psychiatrists at the start of a visit under current practice. Likewise, although MHS practitioners have full visibility on medical records, as opposed to maybe a behavioral health specialist who's treating a civilian in a siloed environment, whether or not it's part of MHS providers' practice to review recent medical encounters is very individual to that practitioner.
Yeah, that's really a good point. So, you know, as with any research study, there are limitations. And can you tell the audience what you feel the limitations of your study were?
Well, Keith, there are a few. Data for the surveillance study was obtained from the MDR and PDTS systems designed for the tracking of administrative coding and billing. Study methodology relied on correct assignments of ICD coding, which can vary by provider, clinic, and area. Limitations on pharmaceutical benzodiazepine usage apply to acute healing period after a TBI. Although a washout period and a record review to check methodology were employed, the possibility remains that a portion of the sample of acute MTBI patients either did not truly sustain an MTBI or sustained one remotely enough that the guideline would no longer apply. The study did not explore benzodiazepine fill rates of the population before sustainment of the MTBI, as the guidance on benzodiazepines does not make an exception for pre-existing prescriptions. However, this information may shed light on provider hesitancy to discontinue such a prescription and would be of interest in future research.
Thanks, Lauren. So to wrap things up, what do you think are the key findings that military providers need to take away from this study?
Well, that's a good question. So our surveillance demonstrated that there's no demographic of patient that was excluded from sustaining a TBI. Lastly, the VA DoD has 25 published clinical practice guidelines for complex patient management of common conditions to both VA and MHS populations. They are updated regularly and are published with companion synopses and supportive practice tools for applied clinical integration. I would definitely suggest checking these out because they contain a wealth of information and are really comprehensive practice tools.
Well, Lauren, thanks so much for sharing your group study. And as I mentioned in the beginning, it's always a pleasure talking with a fellow coworker here at TBI-COE and highlighting the work that they do. You know, this is the first time that I've come across a study where someone has looked at the use of benzodiazepines in patients who have had mild TBI. So great work. And once again, thank you for sharing this information with our audience. That's all we have time for today. You can stay up to date on future episodes by subscribing to Cubist wherever you listen to podcasts, where you can also find links to the articles we discussed and other relevant resources. Cubist is produced and edited by Vinnie White and was hosted today by me, Dr. Keith Stussy. It is a product of the Traumatic Brain Injury Center of Excellence, a branch of the Research Support Division under the Research and Engineering Directorate of the Defense Health Agency, led by Branch Chief Dr. Katie Stout. Thank you for listening to this episode.